Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, stop.
Yo.
Hi, this is Salita with Say Your Peace Radio Show. Sit back, relax. We want to hear from you. So call in at 347-677-1749 to say your piece. Now, our host, Salita.
All right. Good afternoon or good evening, that is, to everyone out there in Blog Talk World. This is Salita with my co-host, Brian, and this is Say Your Piece. How's everybody doing tonight?
Great. Doing good.
Okay, what I want everybody basically to do to introduce yourself to our listening audience, starting with 731.
Hi, this is Randy Short with Judicial Justice, and we're here to promote the cause of Sister DeAndra Green.
Okay. 206.
Hi.
Hello.
This is DeAndra Green.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hi. My name is DeAndra Green.
Okay. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. I am here to talk about domestic violence and my case in particular. And just some of the things that I've encountered.
Okay. Okay. So, kind of tell us. Give me your story. What is? I don't want to sound. What's going on? What's happening? I kind of read a little bit about your story, but we want to get the whole full thing.
Okay. So I've been a victim of domestic violence for 10 years.
Okay.
One relationship in particular, with the father of my children.
Mm-hmm.
And it started off as, you know, just a little verbal abuse, and then it got a little bit worse. Especially, it started off, I really noticed the domestic abuse when I was pregnant. So actually, let me backtrack. A little bit before I got pregnant. So I went to the doctors. I said, you know, I don't want to have any kids right now. So the doctor placed me on birth control. When I got home, he kicked my door in. That was the first one today. Because he wanted me to have a baby. So
hey,
I got off
excuse me. Miss Green, just a minute.
Yes.
Somebody's got something going on that I can hear it in the background, and I can't hear Miss Green. Somebody's either driving with the window down or something. Hello?
It sounds like a bad connection.
Huh? It sounds like what?
A bad connection.
Yeah. Hello?
I can hear you, but it's... a lot of snow in the background.
I can't hear all this in the background. Whoever that is, somebody got something going on in the background that's interfering with the conversation.
I have it on. I had it on mute, Salita, so it couldn't have been mine.
It just stopped.
It stopped.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay. There we go. Go ahead, honey. Now, it sounds great now. Whatever it was is gone. So go ahead and finish telling your story. I apologize for that.
No problem. So I didn't end up taking the birth control, and a couple months later I got pregnant with my daughter.
Uh-huh.
So after that, it was really bad. I would tell him I didn't want to be with him, and I would get beat. So I would have to protect my stomach and just hope and pray that he would stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I ended up leaving him for about a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
After that, things got, and I got back in contact with him. things got better. Mm-hmm. That's what we call the honeymoon stage.
Exactly.
So he was nice. He tried to make it seem like things were going to change. It was a big, you know, it was, I seen a big difference in him. So it made me want to stay. Mm-hmm. I stayed, endured the abuse a couple more years. One time in particular, just, you know, he tried to sexually assault me. Mm-hmm. And then so I left him alone after that. Go a couple more years later, I stayed in contact with him throughout the years, but we just didn't really try to make it work. A couple years later, I ended up getting pregnant with my son when my daughter was four. I didn't encounter the abuse as much as I did when I was pregnant with my daughter, but, you know, it's just a little verbal here and there. You know, but again, you know, people think that verbal is not as bad as physical when, you know, it's really the worst because it really sticks with me. So then fast forward to this year, about June, I decided to give him another chance. Because as everybody who's been in domestic violence knows, you go back and you keep going back, and statistics, you can go back up to 8 times before you finally get the clue. So I go back, things are good. The honeymoon period lasted for a good 3, maybe 4 months. And as of August 8th, we had an incident. I had just got pretty much tired of the abuse. And I was pretty much ready for it to be over. Anyway, I can't go too much into depth because there's a pending case against me.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, okay. So when you, I don't want to open it up to where we, you know, you're treading on the ideal that we're digging deep into the case itself. So are you, how they say that, you're one of the women that snapped? You know that show that comes on TV? I'm not trying to make light of your situation, but that's what came to my mind when you were telling me about it. It's like you had enough. And you're right about the ideal that we go back. We keep going back. We keep going
right.
back. Because he keeps telling us something that's just going to make us, okay, it's going to be better. And we're going to keep going back, and no matter what he says or does, I'm going back. And, okay, tell me about your family support. Did you have family support?
I do have family support, but to some extent. My family, pretty much, you know, 10 years, they get kind of tired of telling you, don't go back. It's going to
exactly.
be the same.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to change. You can't change a person. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard for me to realize that because I'd like to see the good in people, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my family pretty much, they just got to the point where they started telling, you know, they just got tired of talking.
Mm-hmm.
They felt
okay.
like they were getting blue in the face, you know.
Mm-hmm. So are they a part of your support system now since the situation has taken place?
Definitely. They support me to the fullest because of the fact that they know what type of
uh-huh.
person that he is.
Uh-huh.
And the things that I've endured throughout the years, they didn't even know half of the things that I had
uh-huh.
been through because
yeah.
I kept it a secret, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But they stand by me 110%.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, where are the kids right now?
My kids are with me.
Okay.
He did
okay.
take my children when the police
okay.
arrested me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to kind of go into, sometimes we have victim defendants.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes a person does something, and then there's, you know, the other person reacts, you know. So, and that's what you call a victim defendant.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my case, I'm considered a victim defendant. And so when I was arrested, the kids were placed in his care.
Okay.
Without my permission.
Okay.
But, you know, it was what the police decided to do, and he did take custody of my kids without
mm-hmm.
my permission until I did go to the courts and
mm-hmm.
get paperwork stating that I am the sole custodial guardian, and I did regain custody of my kids.
Okay. Now, where is he at now?
He is living his wonderful life. He's just going on manipulating the system into thinking that he's a victim
uh-huh.
when really he's the abuser.
You know what? I really believe, and if anybody wants to elaborate, I believe to a certain extent the Stand Your Ground law, and we probably didn't catch it because I never even heard of it until Trayvon Martin's situation happened. And then I realized, I started researching, and I found out that we have it here in Louisiana, too. But I really believe, now to think about stuff, I believe the Republicans put that law in place for us to a certain extent. When I say for us, I am not talking about us as blacks. I'm talking about women. Because I'm thinking that they know there has been a lot more cases in the SNAP syndrome, with the SNAP syndrome attached to it, than it used to be. Because used to, we wouldn't do anything like this. But now that we're defending ourselves and the mentality they have toward us, I really believe this was put in place to put us back in our place. I mean, I'm sorry.
I wasn't able to say what state this is in, Selena.
Our state or the state she's in?
Can we say, I mean, what state? And we're liberty to say what state it's in?
Yeah, we should be able to say the state.
Yeah, what state did it happen in?
Washington? Seattle, yeah. Washington. Or Kent, Washington.
Okay, and is he currently still in Washington?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so basically what you're saying is that this got turned around and the perpetrator became the victim on paper.
Correct.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Was it a male-dominated situation where you had people from the police and the courts are males, or what was it?
Yes, everybody who I've encountered has been male.
Oh, man.
And if I might add, this is the third time that he's done this to me. The first time I went to jail, I called the police on him. I was roughly 6 months pregnant with my daughter. And this was an instance where it got really volatile, so I decided to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, I was arrested. His brother was there, and his brother was used as a witness. And he was the only other person there because there was nobody there to vouch for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was arrested because the police, I was upset because, you know, I was pregnant and nothing was going to happen. When I got arrested and we pulled up to the police station, there was a police officer. I'm not sure if I can say his name or not, but he says to me, because, you know, I'm frustrated, I'm upset, I need to use the restroom, and I'm pregnant. He says to me, "I see why your old man put his hands on you." Those charges were dismissed.
Can you repeat that again, please?
The police officer looks back in the back of the police car and says to me, "I see why your old man put his hands on you." Quote.
What did he see why he put his hands on you? What do you mean by that?
I was upset and, you know, just talking. No vulgarities, no anything. But I guess I was out of my place for some reason. So he said.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. And that stuck with me for years.
Man.
And I think it always will. His face and his name will always stick out to me.
So did he have any kind of connection with the system?
Hello?
Pardon? Yes, hello, this is Roz. I was just calling in. I called in a little late. I just wanted to introduce myself to your show.
Uh-huh.
I'm Rosalind Cross Ratliff, and I'm from Judicial Justice, and our group is handling the case of Deandra Green.
Uh-huh.
I'm listening to Deandra, and this problem that we have of domestic violence here in the United States is definitely some laws need to be put against this. I really, you know, here in Washington State, where we both live, this is the Stand Your Ground law state.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering why this law does not work for African Americans. Here we have a very brilliant 27-year-old female who's at the height of her career. And an injustice, which is due to no cause of her own, has now prevented her from her career in working. She's not working now. DeAndra was a surgical instrument specialist by trade. And I know her personally. She was one of my coworkers. And in our department that we work, there's only very few of us African-Americans there. So here it is. We have another situation similar to, what is her name? Marissa Alexandria. We have another incident similar to what's happened to Marissa Alexandria, where we live in a state where the law is supposed to protect us from standing on ground, yet we are the ones to go to jail as victims. And something really needs to be done about this.
You know what? I misspoke, and I'm going to correct myself. I said earlier that Stand Your Ground was put in place for us, but what I meant to say was because of, I guarantee you, there's an increase in domestic violence, and the idea that Stand Your Ground is supposed to protect the person who's being violated. But when it comes to us, just like you just said, it doesn't work for us. And why is that it doesn't work for us?
Well, Salita, I think the main thing that the truth thing needs to be looked at, and that a lot of time we fail to really get down to the root of the problem. You know, let's just be frank with, we live in two different societies, one black, one white, and unequal. Just like all of the laws that are set forth, it's at the discretion of the so-called police department to charge someone with a particular crime. Now, the same crime that a black person is being charged with, they'll go and overlook when a white person does the same thing. It's at their discretion. And this same police department is the racist people that have racist attitudes, stereotypes. No matter who you are, you could be the black banker or you could be the Joe Blow working on the garbage truck. They don't care. You're all in the same pot together. And so we understand that it comes a time to where we have to have some representation with for looking into these unjust way these laws are practiced. That's the problem. You have people that don't have to even graduate high school that are out here making decisions on people's lives. These are some people GEDs, and you can be a police officer with all of this authority. I mean, so you can be a country yahoo from the sticks or just all city slicker. As long as you don't care for black folks, it really doesn't matter. Anybody can act a certain way to get a job. And that's what it's adding up to.
Yeah, that's true. And that's I
want to say something just to stay in this realm that white females are the least incarcerated demographic in the United States and have always been since their history, and more so than any other group of persons come to the United States. Going back to colonial times, your early white female immigrants tended to be criminals or whores. I just want to start off by saying more than anybody else that came to this country that had low repute initially were white females. And you'll look at the injustice system has selectively been very unwilling, because it's about perpetuating a group of people's survival. So the women do not get treated the same way. And black women have always been disproportionately represented in the criminal system, always. And so no matter who, whether it's Joanne Little, a black woman in North Carolina who in the 70s was raped in prison, and she killed the guard who was extorting sex from her. This was a big issue in the 70s. there's always been a desire to punish African American women, particularly. So this is what you see here, and there's a double bind in the gender issue of how we black folk deal with each other. So you have a situation where domestic violence is taking place, and they are happy to see a black man abuse a black woman because they really don't want us to have families. They really don't want her to have a job and employment. And in reality, look at how it plays out. There's a lot of money to be gained. If she loses the employment that she doesn't have now due to this case, people may eventually come in and try to take the children, and the state makes money. If she goes, God forbid, gets in the system, they make money of her being locked up. They make money off of her kids being in the system. And, of course, this man becomes a human pathogen to go around and repeat the cycle with another woman. And I see it play out both ways. I see instances where black women lie on black men, but there's a system that rewards self-hatred and destruction. But back on this sister's case, our society penalizes, not so unfairly around jobs. I don't know. I live in Washington. Whenever you apply for anything, on Wednesday I had to be fingerprinted this week to apply for an insurance license. I know people who can't do basic jobs because there's a conviction. And by the way, if you ever watch the news, you'll always hear about doctors, lawyers, bankers, white folks who were never checked for their status of whether they committed a crime or not, or they changed names. This identity theft stuff doesn't necessarily work for us to change our identities. And whenever we apply for anything, they go through every single solitary dimension. They look at your credit. They look at where you live. They look at where you go to school. They look and see if there's a gap in employment. So imagine this sister who's on her way to do greater things. She may even plan to become a doctor and go to medical school and advance herself. This is all being taken away by a system that, with a vengeance, picks out of women, it picks out black women to go to jail, and on the other hand of the ledger, it picks black men out of his favorite group of men to go to jail. In this instance, we see a miscarriage of justice where women and children are supposed to be protected by law. Think about all the sexual harassment statutes out there where if you mention a joke about farting and you get fired from your job because some hysterical white woman hears a joke about farting. And yet a woman who's a victim of physical abuse, when she defends herself, she's criminalized. It's interesting that the laws are supposed to protect women and children, but they're not being applied, not just in this instance. There's an epidemic of domestic violence against women and children in this country because of the economic downturn. And they know it. And their solution has been to allow more guns to be sold. So you see more killings and stabbings and shootings and whole families being killed. And often it is the, more often than not, it is the man that killed the wife and children. So there is an unstated policy, let the poor die.
Yes.
True.
Sorry. Can I elaborate on that?
Oh, yeah.
You talking to me? Oh, okay, go ahead.
So, just to elaborate a little bit on that, I have recently filed an order of protection. I went to the courts, and I had to see an ex parte commissioner. The commissioner happened to be a white woman, and she seen that I was arrested for domestic violence. And she did not go back into the history and see all of the case numbers and, you know, instances that we've had in which I was actually the victim. So I was granted an order of protection under the basis that I had met, my criteria. But she goes on to explain to me that I probably wouldn't be granted an extension because those are temporary orders, so those are granted for 2 weeks. That I probably wouldn't be granted an extension because
hold
of the fact
up,
that
baby. I hear, excuse me, I'm sorry, Miss Lee. I keep hearing something in the background, you guys. Whoever it is, would you please do something with it, because it's kind of irritating and I can't hear Mrs. Green. I don't know what that sound is, but it's back again. Okay, go ahead and finish talking. I apologize for that. Go ahead.
Okay. So, I was granted it that day, and I go back 2 weeks later. On September 4th, I was denied. I had met all of the criteria. I had proven my case. I had proven the fact he's been taken into and committed by the Seattle police for suicide. And, you know, this person has a documented history. I had met all of the criteria, and the judge goes on. I'm sorry, let me rewind just a little bit. So on that day, when I had initially applied, she made it a point to write down that I had been arrested for domestic violence. And like I said, I was granted the protection order that day. When I go back, I was denied, although I had met all of the burdens and showed that it was more likely than not. So I was still denied.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as my hearing was over, a lady runs out. And I thank this lady. She says, "I know you probably can't afford an attorney, but I work in basically she works in cahoots with a legal firm that will take me on pro bono because I had met all of the criteria. So there was no reason for me to be denied an order of protection, and a protection order that is protecting my kids and I."
Mm-hmm.
So here I am, still, I'm trying to fight it, but I'm unprotected. While this man is protected, and he has a history. So I understand exactly what he talks about when he says that, you know, the women and children are not protected. Because I'm walking around with no shield while this man is walking around with a shield protecting him while my children and I live in fear. And we are being displaced because of the fact that the judge decided that I didn't need a protection order because of the fact that I had been arrested under basically false pretenses.
We said noise again.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian, is that your phone making that noise?
Brian.
Can you hear it now?
Yeah, you can still hear
your
noise.
Okay, I was muted out while I was talking, and then I just muted in. Maybe it's coming in. I'm going to have to call back in then.
Yeah, you mute.
I kind of want to elaborate on Mrs. Green's story.
Uh-huh.
My name is Jackie, and I'm actually a friend of Mrs. Green. And I kind of want to elaborate with that because, you know, I kind of moved to Washington myself. I'm from Alabama, and I moved to Washington because of domestic violence. And I kind of really understand where she's coming from because it was so hard for me to, like, leave everything that I built as a single mom myself. I left the house that I was about to buy. I left two or three cars I had built up, and I have no family. I don't know nobody in Washington, didn't know nobody, and I took the courage to leave because my abuser shot me and kidnapped my kids.
What?
Yes.
Oh,
and I had to practically, my state had to remove me due to, like, witness protection because at that time he wasn't apprehended. And I totally feel you, Ms. Green, as far as the system goes, because here it is, this man shot me and kidnapped my kids for like 2 weeks. at the process of him kidnapping my kids, he was driving around with my kids, robbing stores with my son in the car with him. He would put pistols to my kids' head to just want to kill them because he was just so deluded and just gone crazy with everything that was going on with him. And the system, it is so crazy because the system, here it is, locked this man up, and here it is, this man wasn't locked up no more than a year and a half, and they cut him a deal, cut this man a deal, all because he gave up some drug people, and cut this man a deal, and here it is, this man get out within a year and a half of jail time.
Oh,
and to this day, I still fear a lot for my kids because it's not fair to me. This man shot me and kidnapped my kids, and yet all because he gave up a couple drug dealers, you let him back out on the street.
Man.
Are your children
with you now?
So I totally
understand, you know, Ms. Green, as for, and the other guy who was speaking as far as the system. The system, I feel, and excuse my friend, is just so fucked up. I feel the system for us women is just not fair. And then, you know, the killing part about this is his sister, you know, to reiterate back, his sister was working for the state. And every shelter that I was hiding in, due to that, my name was in the system. And these people have to put information like this in the system, especially when the state is involved with helping you. They put the information in the system, and here it is. These people have access to find me when I'm trying to get away from my abuser. These people have access to be able to know where I am and leak it. And I feel like even the system itself, the state system itself, is totally screwed. I don't trust no state system. Here it is. They have all these protection laws where they say, oh, you can go up under this type of protection, or you can go up under this state type of protection, you can go up under the good cause program to where he don't have to pay child support just so he won't know where you are. At the same time, the system is what leaked me to this man being able to find me.
Man.
And it's just so crazy. So I can totally reiterate with Ms. Green, like, the system is screwed, and it's sad. As us black women, we have to fight this battle on our own sometimes. Like, we have to sit back and fight, and I don't think it's fair to us, but then let us shoot that person or let us try to fight for our life. You want to lock us up for life.
But I want to interject two things, and that is just on Ms. Green's case, and I want to speak to the system in Alabama and put my thoughts there. But for all the people listening, we have a petition that's being circulated by Judicial Justice, and we're calling on the State Attorney General Rob McKenna for Washington State to demand that he dismiss all charges. And I would add in caveat to it that we have an investigation for how Sister Green was handled. And in relationship to what the sister in Alabama is saying, we need to call for a hearing, at least in Washington State, for this to come forward, even if it's not happening to the sister in Washington State, but it happened in Alabama. What can be done to change, correct, and improve and defend these sisters? And then my third point, and I'm going to just get to it because it's a problem everywhere in the country for African Americans. There exists no strong organization or advocacy group for working class and or poor African Americans, irrespective of what the issue is. There is a group called the National Congress of Black Women right here in Washington, D.C. I know the president of it. there was a situation where women were being physically abused, sexually abused on a job site. And I couldn't find any female organization that would work with me to go after the men doing it. I was amazed when I went and said, hey, sister, these are your sisters doing this. Do you think that you could support me? And so she told me, we don't do that.
I want to reiterate when you say that sometimes some of us sisters don't know. Like with me, I'd be wanting to get in groups like that, and I'd be want to support programs like that. But like a lot of people say, it ain't what you know, it's who you know. Like I'd be want to get involved like that, but I can't find programs that I can be like really talk so strongly about and to get in and to help something, because a lot of sisters too are afraid still as well. Like some sisters just be too afraid their job may be at risk if they go forth with this, or if you know they may be sly way messing with a drug dude, and he, you know, that's the only way they can keep food and whatever on the table. I want to help, but it's going to risk my due, or it's going to risk my life living situation, you know. Some black sisters are just scared of it, but it's really hard to find a good black sister. And I can definitely say in my situation, you know, I live in fear so much to where I didn't just develop. I'm not running because I know my life has already been on the line twice with this man. And I refuse. I will fight to the end to help this system understand that we are having to fight for ourselves just to keep men off of us. And it's not fair to us and our kids that are growing up to this day. So just to reiterate what you were saying as far as about programs and women, like, nah, we don't do that. Some women, though, want to do it, but they just don't know how to go about the way of doing it.
Well, I hear your point. I wasn't talking about programs. I'm talking about existing organizations, allegedly civil rights-oriented organizations started by and for black women, and they're not doing it. Now, you have groups that will help women, but there's a political agenda, and that political agenda is it's pushing the gay and lesbian agenda. They'll help you if you're a lesbian, or they'll help you if you don't like men, or if you don't mind getting abortions. There's all sorts of help if it's against an existing family, or if you agree to get, you know, maybe if you agree to, like, get your tubes tied. I mean, they have all kinds of crazy folks out there that will do things for you, provided you aren't, it's not so much for you. The game is, because you mentioned, Ms. Green mentioned it was a white woman that wouldn't help her. I'm willing to bet you $100 a woman was gay. And I've seen some of these court places where, and I've seen this from law schools, a whole bunch of folks that work in family law courts, a lot of times they're gay white women with the short hair who are there to destroy families, and if the woman likes men, then you know what, don't give any protection for men. And I've seen almost a desire for women to be the victims of violence because it may push them over to what their agenda is. And I'm not even riding against or protesting about who sleeps with who or how, but if you happen to be a black woman that likes children and like black men, provided they're not swinging on you like Ike Turner, where is your group that protects you? And that does not exist. The Urban League, most people do not know, was founded initially to prevent violence against black women when they moved to northern cities.
Mm-hmm.
So over 100 years ago, we had an organization that protected black women from types of domestic violence, white slavery, from being raped, but we do not have one a century later. And this is sort of where Ms. Green and Rosalyn and the sister from Alabama and the others, we need to be thinking about the creation of new organizations or bodies that protect black women, that provide legal defense, and it shouldn't be something that's just about women, because there are plenty of men like me. I don't like domestic violence. What happened in the case of the women being harassed at, I'll say where it was, Georgetown University Hospital, my godbrother got fired from his job because he complained about it. And I had to threaten to go after the unemployment division of the city because I figured this man shouldn't be denied unemployment if he got fired for doing the right thing, that he didn't like seeing women disrespected. There's another side to this. And that is the same way that women are scared. Some of you women have no idea that if you're a man and you say something about what another man's doing to his woman, folk will come and kill you. So he has to understand that this violence thing, we need to have something that empowers the people who be the support unit for the person that's the victim of violence, as well as empowering them. For example, I know for a fact when someone was raped, I took the sister to the police station, and we got the dude locked up. There are a lot of people that want to hurt me for it. I'm speaking from experience, and there are men out there that are pro-women. We have to have an organization and a group where black men and women together protect ourselves from the predators, from the child molesters, from the batterers, from the beaters, from the rapists, and it needs to be both genders, but with the focus on protecting our women and children first. And I believe that there are black men out there that would support that. In fact, this guy who did this thing in Alabama, his picture should be up. The same way I put the picture out for the woman that went after Kenneth Ford, this guy's picture, you know what? This dude would be afraid to show his face if a lot of brothers knew what he did. You see, a lot of men that treat women like this, they're really chummy with men. Hey, what's up, man? Everything cool? Yes, because there are a lot of men like me. I had a roommate. He beat up his girlfriend. He told me we were never friends again. I would sleep with a knife under my pillow. As a figure, you punch out your woman, I mean, that'd be the last person you punch. But there's got to be this. But back to the Sister Green. This is from Alabama. We've got to put pressure on the state of Washington.
Yes.
I have no problems. Yes. And I would say this, if whoever people are listening, do you know that you can write a letter as a constituent to your Congress member the same way I don't have a problem? I have an email for my congressperson. I will write my congressperson and say that I have a friend who is going through this madness in Washington State, and my Congress member will write the representative for Ms. Green and say, we understand that this is happening. We have the capacity, even through letters, through calling. In fact, who's your congressperson, Green? Who is it? Because I'm in D.C. I can go over and visit them. I mean, I'd get off work one day early or come by and look at them and ask them what's the problem. You'd be amazed.
Yeah. Well, I'm reading the website right now to Attorney General Rob McKenna. And after reading it, this just goes to show you that we're just going in a vicious circle to nowhere. It's like the bridge to nowhere. This is what it reads. Under the state law and Washington State Constitution, the Attorney General's office has little original criminal authority, meaning the office generally cannot investigate or prosecute crimes without a written request from the county prosecutor or governor. So why the hell, my question is, why the hell do we need an attorney general if he doesn't have any power to make any changes?
Exactly.
And
I
then
totally
it
agree.
Goes on to say that what a wonderful job the state of Washington attorney general is doing with the police department. Now, domestic violence has always been a serious, serious act. And it's never been prosecuted the way that it should be. And we are demanding today Attorney General Rob McKenna to get off his ass and do something.
Amen.
We want these charges dismissed today.
interesting. But, you know, he also just cut a lot of funding to, and this is so weird because, you know, again, moving from Alabama to another state, this was like a culture shock to me because, you know, I'm a country girl, you know. And when I got here, I was hearing so much about how they feel like, you know, they don't need to be funding programs for domestic violent women. So where else do you feel the money needs to go? And they feel like they want to build more prisons and do all this other stuff. So what about domestic violence women? I mean, it's women out here who live in their house in so fear of going outside to where they don't even, they shouldn't even live a regular life. And, you know, and here it is, you cutting funding and programs to support them and to go and move on so they can get support and to help them restart their life over, but yet he's cutting all the funding to the domestic violence program.
Well, Jackie, you know, the prison industry is all built on sheer greed anyway. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. And
right.
It's doing exactly what it's meant to do. It's meant to put as many African Americans in prison as possible because they make money off of that. Free labor.
Right.
They get free labor and they don't have to pay any money and they make billions. The prison industry is on the stock market at the current. I really don't have much hope in any program put forth for domestic violence.
Yeah,
it's a
Rob,
crime,
you know,
against a man.
Rob.
Okay, hold up.
Hello, Rob, hello?
Hold up. We have 253. Are you out there, 253? Hello?
Yes, I am.
Is this 253, 205? Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Salida?
Yeah, go ahead, baby.
Okay, one thing I was going to add that a lot of people, I think, are overlooking. A lot of times, and I know it's a big concern that we are being put into these positions because the prison system is such a lucrative moneymaker and it's a legalized slavery. But another part that a lot of people have been complaining about but has been under the radar is outside, even those who don't go to the prison system, do you realize that the majority of the legal people that are in legal trouble are black people that have to end up paying all kind of money? They get entangled in this legal spider web where, like the young lady was saying, where they have no protection in the system. And then it comes down to finances. When we don't have the finances to fight these injustices, then we are basically dependent upon the system, and all it takes
right.
is one word being said, and we lose our employment, and therefore we're almost living from week to week as it is, and we're just at the bottom of the barrel. So I
right.
think we need the whole thing, if you look at the amount of black people that are in this legal system that are basically ran by white America, we're being systematically taken out financially as well as physically when it comes to prison.
Well, Deandra's case, she's a victim in more ways than one because the relatives of her abuser is in the legal field. I believe they're lawyers or something. Dee, can you explain that a little bit more?
Wait, you guys, we're going to take a break real quick, and then we'll be back, okay? Just one second.
Okay. Hey, Dee Dee.
Huh?
Yeah, just to explain the fact that, oh, my God, I'm getting tongue twisted here. Can you explain the fact that your ex-boyfriend's family comes from a family of attorneys? They've been trying to go after you and pursue after you for years. They've been trying to take your children for a long time. So how do you be able to fight and overcome someone that has so much power over you? Can you hear me? A little, huh? A little? Not too much.
Thank you.
on that website and rent that. You guys are doing absolutely nothing but promote the police department.
I want to tell the story of our existence in our own worlds. I want others to know that we all have a story to tell about who we are and what we are about. We as women play a very important role in life. God has allowed us to bear the brunt and bruises of so much pain throughout the world because He knew that we could survive through wars and injustices that have been geared toward us. He truly knew what He was doing when He created us. That is why they say we are the better half of the man. We as women need to take our place and stand tall, not wavering on who we are. We need not allow others to define us. We need to come together and stop putting each other down, making one another feel that they have to compete. Compete for attention, for relevance, and for substance. We have to know that we are somebody, that we are strong, resilient, intelligent, and most of all, survivors. Again, I say stand tall. Take your place in what defines you. Never let a tear be wiped away before it has a reason to be shed. Make every part of who you are represent what you stand for. You are relevant, no matter how others perceive you. You are relevant.
All right, you guys, we are back with Say Your Peace, and we're talking with DeAndra Green out of Washington State. Go ahead, DeAndra.
I was just talking before your break. This is what I wanted to put out there to Brian. In DeAndra's case, there seems to be a problem in her ex-boyfriend's family. He comes from a family of attorneys. So what is a person supposed to do when you have to try to protect yourself, and then he has a family of attorneys that get him out of trouble every time?
Exactly. As well as a mother who works.
They have been after her for years now. They've been trying to get her children. They have tried to put her down so many times, and I know her personally. As I mentioned before, we're coworkers. There were many a days I had to lift her up. Seriously, lift her up from these battles that she's been going through with this man. I personally have seen an incident that I can't speak on right now because it's in litigation, and I plan on being a witness for DeAndra. But something has
like
to be done with this guy. He definitely has to go down. I'm sorry. He's got to go.
Now, what happens is what you're saying is that family is legally connected, and actually a lot of times it goes deeper than that. I've seen where we have legal connections. I know here in this area, then that means that you can be connected with the judge. You can personally know the judge, and that means you and the judge can talk after hours on the phone. It happens every day.
Exactly.
It's an uphill battle. It's not necessarily even a fair battle. What has happened is she almost has to, unfortunately, have some type of, I think Randy said earlier, some type of organization because she needs some support. Not only financial, but she has to get some support that can help. Only thing that can, well, not the only thing, I won't say the only thing, but one of the biggest things she needs is publicity to expose what's going on. She has to expose what's going on because as long as it's under the rug, they will continue to do what they're doing because they have no repercussions behind it. So, what I would suggest is that it's going to take a strong, it's not going to be easy, but strong, wide-open campaign to start exposing and letting people connect the dots. I would, in all cases, make sure I'm carrying a cordless recorder on me at all times. You just never know what may be said by any particular individual. And it's unfortunate you have to do that, but you need one that's voice activated because, I mean, being that they're not tapes now, you can go back if it's no good, and you can go back and erase it.
What is wrong with
that?
This is what exactly judicial justice movement is all about. This is what we do. We help people get their stories out there to the media. We help people expose their stories. And we've had several great outcome cases, kind of similar to DeAndra's case, the Eric Oliver case. That was a pretty good victory for us. And it took just a few weeks of advertising and exposing, and all charges were dismissed. I'm stumbling over my words. I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe I need a cigarette or something. Forgive me.
Oh, you don't need that.
But, yeah, the judicial justice is a movement that helps people promote their case. We will take on any case, anything from murder to child abuse, to you name it, we'll take it. And we will promote your case, and we'll try our best to get your case heard.
Definitely that's something that must be done. It's going to come from when you're connected, that means almost to the point, if I have a lawyer in the family, that basically gives me unlimited resources. And that lawyer, if they're in the system, they have connections with those that are in the system. It doesn't even have to be a favor. It just could be a personal knowing someone versus someone I don't know, and you're wondering how they're getting off. Because let's face it, if someone is up on these kind of charges, I mean, has done these type of things, in most cases they would be under the jailhouse. But when it comes to us, you could be the victim, and the victim then, like she said, they can turn the tables and then make you the perpetrator, which we know that's false.
Exactly. Can I come in and elaborate a little bit on his family connection?
Sure.
His uncle is a major lawyer in Washington. You know, we don't have too many African-American attorneys, and his uncle is one of the very well-known attorneys. He was also married to one of the biggest judges in the state of Washington. He was married to the judge's daughter, the uncle was. As well as he has a mother that works for social services. And a little bit after the incident, I don't know if I iterated on that or touched on that, but he did take custody of my kids, and I had to go through the police in order to regain possession of my children. So his mother works for the Department of Child Welfare, basically. And so she knows, you know, basically how to get custody. She knows, you know, the key words and the things to do. And I think that she might be giving him advice. because he has everything to gain as far as if he were to gain custody of my children. He wouldn't have to pay child support. I mean, you know, he would look like the victim instead of being the victor. So I think
and
his mother has a big part.
And I'm wondering if that's a conflict of interest. That should be a conflict of interest. I'm not sure, but it sounds like it should be, because they're too close to the case to really get involved. They shouldn't be able to, but we know how things work sometimes in this country with the corruption that's going around. It's just terrible.
Exactly. So I'm feeling a little undefeated as far as those aspects go.
Well, don't never feel.
Okay,
you keep your head
you
up at all times.
Can you have your case, whatever direction, go into whatever county you are? Can you have it removed from that county and taken to another county?
I don't think so. I'm not quite sure of that, but I don't think so.
Okay, why not? Because if it's a conflict of interest from what you just said and you can prove that it's a conflict of interest, why can't you? Don't
yes,
you have
you
that
good,
right?
You got a good point, because George Zimmerman
right.
did the same thing.
Yes, he did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Why wouldn't you be able to? That's something to look into. If you know
yes,
all the
totally agree.
Out there and you know they're related, wouldn't that be
well,
something
see, here's this goes back to the problem again that Randy touched on. People who lack finances and lawyers. When
right.
you're
yeah.
dealing with when you're dealing with attorneys that are from court-appointed attorneys,
right.
you're not going
right.
to, even if you gave them that information, they're not going to follow up on it or do anything
right.
in your favor.
They're
going to
take
help
their
you.
Time and push it and keep pushing back dates
so
and dates.
There
and
we
dates.
Go again with, you know, so these are things, this is great information that we're giving you, Dee Dee, because
right.
these are things that you can do. And you can do this by just writing letters and getting it out there. You know, my movement will help you push your story on the internet. And
definitely,
we have hundreds of supporters out there that know your case already that will stand behind you 100%, but you have to take the first move. And I would
mm-hmm.
also like to say to both of you ladies here that joined us today, I commend both of you. I tip my hat off to both of you, because it takes a lot of courage to stand up and fight that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're
now,
welcome.
You
keep now, fighting, too.
The young lady that's from Alabama, you relocated yourself to Washington. So what are you doing now as far as your case? Do you have an open case or?
Yes, ma'am. And you know, the weird thing is that I go back to saying I really just don't trust the state system, period. I'm just, excuse my French, but fuck that, you know, because the weird thing is about 5 months ago, I was living a perfect, okay, I thought I was okay. I thought everything was over with. Okay, Lord, you brought me from Alabama to a state with no family, no friends, no nothing, just me and my two children. And you brought me from out of it. And I thought everything was over. I'm ready to start my life over. I had people, you know, different case managers and different other people in my life that really helped me. And to help me out, you know, I got my Section 8 and I got my housing. And I be damned, about 2 months ago, the system, the DSHS system here, I get a phone call out the blue from my kid's daddy, knowing exactly where I stay, exactly where he can find us now. And he found that out because Washington State updated my information in their state database.
Oh, man.
Without red flagging me, saying that I'm up under state Washington protection. So
that sounds like
they supposed to been red flagged me in their system, so that I don't have to get child support or no type of contact with my abuser. These motherfuckers, they messed around and put all my information and updated in the system and turned it over to child support. And when they turned it over to child support got in touch with child support in the state of Alabama, and ended up, he was paying child support, and he asked the lady, well, where am I paying this directly to? Because he paid directly to me. We're not going through no type of state service or nothing. He paid directly child support. And she gave him my updated information that was in their system that Washington updated my system on. And here it is. I ended up, you guys, I was so scared and so freaked out that I left my house that they helped me get up here. And I ended up back homeless again because I'm like, I'm so scared. This man know what I said again.
Oh,
so
my God.
I get food stamps, you know, and I'm going to keep it real with you guys.
I need to ask a question of you in this, because there are a couple of things that come to mind. And I'm just in complete empathy with you about all that you've said and what you're going through. My question is, because this has happened to you in anonymity, do you have a photograph of this brother?
Of the brother that
Man that's doing all this stuff.
Yes,
do you have a picture of him? Are you able to scan that and send it to people?
Sure.
Well, have you ever thought that if people just circulated a little blurb without saying who, but this person's name. In fact, if you have their social security number, I know this sounds mean, but to just circulate this person's information, you don't have to do it. Some of us could just put this person, be on the lookout for this person, blah, 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 blah. If there's a case number or anything like that where this thing has happened, then none of us who discuss this can be accused of slander or libel. We can simply put it out with the face and the person's name is being protected. Do you realize if that thing got circulated, that if people saw that, not that it would make your life perfect, but this person would probably have to be followed. People thrive in secrecy and anonymity, and I think that that's something that we should look at in the future for judicial justice. If we have a batterer or an abuser,
well, we've
or
done
pedophile,
that with the Kenneth the Kenneth Ford
thing.
Case.
Yeah, we put the sister's picture.
We'll put
his people should know who this guy is. He shot a woman. He did this, and put that out because stuff travels.
Right.
I think that as long as he's able to be a little private torturer and harasser and abuser, it makes him feel like a big, big man.
Mm-hmm.
But if everybody knew about him, I mean, I can, and I have a lot of fun. I mean, this is something that can be done 5-10 minutes.
Yeah,
don't
sleep really.
With this man, if you don't want him to shoot you or terrorize you like a person, da 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 da. He shot a woman. Don't sleep with this person. Do you know a lot of these folks can't handle truth?
Right.
See, the system isn't into truth. It's just operating through procedures and policies. But you should become his publicist.
Right.
Indirectly, everybody should know this. You know which church he went to, where his mama goes to church, or what school he went to. You don't have to do it directly. And you just send emails. I had to do this once, where a white man covered up the molestation of a black female child in Ohio, and nobody wanted to do anything about it. I'm not an attorney, so what I did was I wrote a few letters to people in the building where he worked, and I figured if the secretary opened up a letter where I was accusing him of being involved with covering up the molestation of the child and questioning where their pictures or other things that he personally knew about that he didn't share, that everybody in that building would know within a day, especially if I send it to a woman, they're going to tell everybody. The guy got fired. Now, this guy has a job somewhere. There's got to be a woman or something in that job place he works. Imagine if she knew that he was out shooting women. If he has a job and he's shot someone, that's been proven in court, why is he able to derive an income to attack you?
You know, and I totally agree with that. And I have to live with this every day. Like, why in the hell did he get so much leeway? But yet every day I look at in the mirror, I have health issues because of you shooting me, and yet I'm mentally just dysfunctioned because of what you've done to me. Like, I can't trust no man right now. I can barely even be in a room around a man without always looking over my shoulder or shaking about to have an anxiety attack just because I'm always in fear of that. But, you know, yep. I serve a mighty good God. I really do. I serve a mighty good God. And I vow to myself, I'm not running anymore because I feel like he has control over my life to where I can't do things, and I refuse to run. What I just vow to myself that I'm going to stand for my life. I shot it, and I made it through. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my time, and I feel like being a strong black mom that I am, I'm not going to let him take no more of my life than he already took. And I stand for myself. I'm not running no more, and I choose not to run anymore because I have been running on the run for 3 years from this man, 3 years. And 3 years of my life is destroyed because of this man. And I just refuse to keep running. It's just get a time in your life where you just fed up and you're tired. And I'm just tired. I have health issues. I have so much other things. I have to keep myself strong for my kids. My kids that endure so many things that they don't even need to see. And yet I have to be that mom, black mom, to stand strong for them. It's hard being a mom and a dad, but
let me ask you something.
I just refuse for him to steal that joy from me. Now I get involved in so much things out there to help women to understand, like, I'm not running no more. It's got to be something out there to make us get to the point where we should have to live in fear no more of our life, of this man, just because the system won't lock his ass up.
Ma'am. Now, are you getting counseling in the process of what you, I mean, being, you know, trying to stay out the public eye?
Yes, ma'am. I really do. I'm on ongoing counseling. I just recently almost was in the hospital because of him having contact with me. And I go back to say that's why I just do not trust the state system. Like, I don't trust nobody anymore. I mean, I don't give my ID to people. I don't even let people just even ask. When you ask my name and where I stay, that's just no way I'm going to give it to you. It's just no way possible. It's a lot of things I can't do right now because I'm just refusing to leak my name, my social, to anybody.
So it... I really feel my heart goes out to you.
I don't know,
we could kind of help you, but I don't know how to help you. I'm going to be honest with you.
Right.
I don't know that scenario. I've been around people because I've volunteered for domestic violence, and I've worked for our area here for Turning Point here. But then I had a friend that lost a friend to domestic violence. I mean,
right.
Blow the head off. So,
well, Jackie,
my thing is, go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, God, I was going to let you finish what you were saying.
Later. I was just saying, especially here in Louisiana, we are the worst state. You think Alabama is bad for domestic violence. Louisiana is on the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to taking care of their women here. So, really, we could, I mean, I'm not saying there shouldn't be no help, but we are not the ones to talk because it's like looking at Alabama in the face.
with the law.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie, this is what I wanted to say. When you were explaining your case and you were saying that the welfare system was the one that put your information out into their database, which gave the information to your ex. That sounds like a lawsuit to me. I would really look into that. Speak with someone, possibly who could do pro bono, or go downtown and find someone that you can speak to and explain that circumstances. Because I would sue the state of Washington for that.
And
you have
that,
and
you
are
under
a protective order, so they should protect you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't go, you can't bring it public because you're under the protective order and you don't want him to know where you're at. But publicity would be a great way to get that out there that this is what's happening. You're not the only one. I'm quite sure there's many victims that's going through the same thing. We probably lost a lot of victims from the idea that the state didn't do their job. They didn't take care of protect you guys. So you're like stuck between a rock and a hard place because you don't want anybody to know where you at, but it's better to get your story out there.
Okay.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I totally
because
agree.
I think that's serious.
Yeah,
that's
serious. Yeah, last week I had
you really don't have anything to lose at this point because he knows where you are.
Right, exactly. And I just talked to my welfare worker, and I asked her. I was like, "Look, how did you manage to update my information and yet got in touch with Alabama, the Department of Human Resources?" And had to tell them, and she was like, well, they knew you're up under the Good Cause program. But then when I talked to the child support in Alabama, they was like, no, we don't have nothing about you supposed to be in the Good Cause program. Well, what the hell? Wait a minute. You have legal papers telling me that you guys got me up under the Good Cause program. But here it is, Alabama is stating that they have no record of you guys sending information stating that you don't need to collect child support on my behalf due to that domestic violence. And it's like, well, what the hell? If they say they ain't got nothing and you telling me, and I actually got the paper because once you sign up for the Good Cause program, they make you sign the documents right then and there. So I have a copy of the shit. And it's like, but Alabama stating they don't have nothing. So you mean to tell me you just literally gave all my information to these motherfuckers, and now they have it, and basically they really can do what they want. And by law, Alabama state law, and I really hate the South laws because they still kind of, I think personally, living in racism because it's still racism go on down there.
You're in Alabama. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, I was asking, I was like, well, how is it that you guys, by law, they have to tell the father where he's paying direct child support to?
Yeah, but that's where your loopholes fall in place. Now, I grant you, there's a way around it. But unless we don't, we know that we're around it, they're going to use standard operate procedure. They have had this come up before. These things have happened before. And I guarantee you, there's a certain request or something you have to put in that you haven't been told about, and we're not privy to, that they're taking advantage of, and they just put you in the system. Because believe me, white women sit on a different scale when it comes to the white justice system than black women, and it's just information that we don't have because this is not the first time that this has happened. It's just the point that a lot of times if we have somebody in the system that's willing to stand up or work with us, we just don't know about it.
Right.
And Alabama be no different from Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia. We're talking about, you know, the Dirty South along with Florida. The research about the things that happen to African Americans in the system in which we live. And I just think that it's a real prudent upon us to stand up and find some people that are willing. And sometimes it's just going to take more networking. But I know in the meantime, You're saying
right.
you don't have networking time. You need some action time. And
right.
I think it's going to take where we have to put some heads together,
mm-hmm.
you know, to come up with a solution for this.
I have a suggestion. I was thinking about, hello, I had a suggestion. A thought came to mind, and I'm thinking it works for other things. If I'm correct, one of us has some Nation of Islam connections. Am I correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay. How hard would it be for FOI to send this Negro a letter of cease and desist? You know, just a nice letter, brother, we're praying for you. How hard would that be? Because you know what? That's all you need, because he's a bully. If he knew some black men would knock his head in, he would get part of him. It's not all of him, but some of him would be a little worried.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier that in the Nation of Islam, and I'm not sure on procedures, but I'm pretty because we are organizations out to protect all our people. But mm-hmm. I know for a fact if it was one of the sisters that this happened to, he would get a visit. He wouldn't get a letter.
Well, I understand. I'm being very polite, Brendan.
But I'm thinking that if someone has a problem like this, if they have visited their local mosque or prayer group and sit down and consultate with the sister, they have what they call sister captains in training, that they will deal directly. They don't have to talk to a man. They'd be talking to a woman. And I think some inroads could be moved to take care of this problem, I do believe.
Also, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Also, you said your case manager gave that information. Why didn't you turn her into her supervisor? Because
I did.
I did. Okay.
I did. And I was like, okay. The weird part about it is, like I said, the system is so fucking screwed. And actually, I kind of do understand why you're saying sue, because I think they kind of knew they fucked up. And they was like, because when I pushed the issue, they was like, well, you know, they tried to explain it to me like, oh, it's a process, and maybe they just haven't got the information in time. But we know we put the paperwork in. I was like, first of all, when you put this information in the system, you put it in the system then and there. I watched you type this up in the system right then and there. So it's not a process. All these it's nothing but one phone call to approve it, and it's that. And my thing is, I gave you protection orders. I gave you, showing you all these police records of how you shot me, kidnapped my kid. The reason, even the feds moved me from my state. I wasn't moved from my state by regular local police. I was moved from my state by the feds. This state already have this information on me. This is the bad part about it, is you guys already have this information on me.
To Jackie's defense, I would, as a union delegate myself, I can tell you by complaining to the supervisor, or you could even complain to the CEO of the company, all they would have done was cover their own ass. They wouldn't have done anything to help. So this story definitely needs to be exposed. It needs to be exposed because this is what they do. This is what major corporations do. They love to keep incidents in-house. They don't want to get outside. They keep it in-house. And they will come up with some old kind of bogus charges investigations that they might have, but it really amounts to about a hill of shit when you really look down to it.
Right.
A lot of times what those guys will do is when you have a supervisor in those capacities and things, that they're all friends and get it too deep with each other.
Their job is to protect the reputation of that company.
They're not going to do anything in favor
to help her. So her best bet is to go outside of that and expose that thing big time I got one word for you, sweetheart.
The thing is, like I'm so afraid of exposing myself, though.
But listen, baby, what I'm saying is this is just proper procedure for you to go by so that if they do try to come back on you, they can't say, well, you late, you didn't do what you were supposed to talk to a supervisor first. You need to do that. That's just out of proper the procedures that is used, whether you go outside or not. But at
that
least
might be true,
they know
more
that
so than talking has to be put in writing.
Talk to
because
them.
She could say, because they could easily turn back around and say, you never said a word to me. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about because I deal
Ross,
with this every day in the hospital. It has to be in writing. So if she didn't have it in writing, and then they have a statute of limitation on when it's supposed to be done, I mean,
right.
Her best bet right now
Ross,
is to just
I've been there. I know
thing.
What you're talking about. I did it for the VA. I was in the union for the VA. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm
mm-hmm.
saying writing or whatever way you can contact her supervisor, make sure that you know what you need to say to her, that you're well aware of what happened, and you don't
right.
have to threaten. You don't have to be mean to her. Just say, I'm well aware that she made a mistake and gave my information that could cause me to lose my life. You say it to her like that, they can do with it whatever they want to, as long as you know you did what you were supposed to do. That's the first
right.
chain.
Well,
chain
I would never say she made a mistake. I would never use the word mistake because you don't make mistakes like that with someone that is being covered by the government for protection.
She doesn't have
that's
to use
right.
that word.
That's incompetent.
Just the ideal that you're well aware that what she did could cause you your life, basically, no matter what it was, that could cause you your life. You need to let her
right.
know that. They can do all the cover-up they want, as long as you did the first thing, and that was to tell her supervisor, and you have it in writing that you told her supervisor. That's what I'm saying, if you want to do something like that, because you are in a very dangerous situation.
Right. The thing that a lot of our people don't know is it's more to it than just speaking to someone about something serious like that. It always has to be in writing. I tell my people that all the time in the hospital when they want to make complaints with their supervisors, directors, or managers, that is so important that you can't just go into the office and talk to a director. Get that in writing because, believe me, they're writing everything that you say down. Everything is about a paper trail. That's what it's all about.
Miss Green, are you still
so
there?
It's so important to get out to your audience because someone else may be going through this and they really need to know the correct procedures to follow. Because this woman, her rights was horribly violated. My heart really goes out to you, Jackie. My heart goes out for you too, Dee Dee.
Miss Green, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. We weren't ignoring your problem, because the show was supposed to be for you. But
yeah,
right. She came in, and that was a great. I'm glad that she did because she has some insight on what she can do for her problem. So it's great that she did call in at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I my heart goes out to both of you guys because I can't say I walked in your shoes. I don't know how that is, but I've been around people who have, and it takes a lot out of you as a woman. It takes a lot out of you as how your self-esteem is and how
right.
do you go from here. Where do
exactly.
I go from here? My whole life has been torn apart. My job is done. How am I going to go from here? And please, I'm going to say something, and I don't want anybody to get offended by what I'm getting ready to say because it goes for me, too, when it comes to women. We have to learn, and we don't pay attention to it. We have to learn how to deal with men in general, period.
Right.
We have to see the warning signs and don't look over them. We
exactly.
have to know it's time to go. I don't like this. I'm not comfortable in this. I don't like the way you're treating me. I'm leaving. Now, let me say this. It's not always that easy. I'm just talking it. It's not that easy to leave. But the warning signs are in the dating period. It's not before. It's not after the marriage. The honeymoon part starts in the dating. When you start looking at the warning signs on how he's controlling you,
who you can
right.
talk to, what you can wear. That starts in the dating part. And if you continue to ignore it and you think it's all, oh, that's just how he is. No,
mm-hmm.
no, that's not how he is. Because you know in your heart how a man is supposed to treat you. You know that. That's something
right.
we know. Okay, I want a man to treat me with kindness, sweetness. I want him to be faithful. I want him to open up the car door. Not necessarily mean that's how they're going to always be. But those
mm-hmm.
are the things that you look for in a man. When they're not doing those things, when they're being mean to you, verbally abusive, hitting you, pushing on you, even if it's a love tap
mm-hmm.
turns into a fight. You know why?
Right.
My best friend, she had a habit of doing that. And I kept telling her, I said, stop hitting on him. She would be play hitting. They learned they wind up having a 7-year physical, violent, domestic violent relationship that they had to get divorced or else they were going to kill each other. Because of the little love taps that they kept doing back and forth. I've got my nose busted trying to break them up. So I know, that's why I say I know what it is.
Now, can
in,
I interject?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. I started dating him when I was roughly 17, 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I was young. A lot of teenagers don't know.
No.
And this goes for the African-American community, too. We don't think, we tend not to think of certain things as being domestic violence, not
mm-hmm.
knowing we're in a severely violent relationship. I got
exactly.
pregnant with my daughter when I was 18, so that incident where he kicked in my door when he found out I was on birth control happened when I was about 17, 18-ish. So, you know, sometimes as, you know, young teenagers, we think, oh, that's so cute. He loves me. He loves me. Not
yeah.
It's not, that's
exactly.
not love. That's not how love is supposed to be. And then also this goes for us without father figures. See, a father
mm-hmm.
figure, a father is a girl's first example of how a woman should a man should treat a woman.
Mm-hmm. A good father.
I grew up without a father. Right, a good father. I grew up without a father. So I lacked that example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I took it as, oh, he loves me, he loves me. That obsessive behavior, I took
mm-hmm.
that as he loves me, he loves me. Not
yes.
knowing that that's not how love is not supposed to, love is not supposed to hurt.
No, it's not. You're right. You're right. You're right. And once you, but even though when you're, even, well, see, now what they're trying to do now is they're trying to teach the young girls about dating abusive boyfriends because those
right.
boys are learning that from home. They're seeing daddy knock the hell out of mom, or they're seeing their uncle knock the hell out of his auntie, or their brother
right.
knocking the hell out of his girlfriend. So
exactly.
he's surrounded in a house full of violence. He's going to take that with him and think
domestic
it's all
violence
right to
is just,
yeah,
exactly.
he's
it's
gonna,
a learned behavior.
Yeah, it's a learned behavior. And it's up to us to also teach our daughters
right.
the warning signs of domestic violence.
Exactly.
And some of us, we're too busy wanting to be loved and taken care of and all this. We miss out on the whole thing of, okay, let me teach my daughter, honey, if a guy hits you, this is what you do. You walk away, leave him alone, don't date him, tell him don't call you anymore, do whatever you got to do, but don't let him hit you again because we always
right.
think it's cute. We think it's
yeah.
cute. Oh, look how he's choking her. Huh? You're standing there watching somebody choke your daughter and you think
right.
it's cute. I've seen that. Okay, that's why are you choking on my daughter? Why are you hitting my daughter? And then, like you said, with the absentee of the father figure in the house, a real father would have beat the crap out of him and kept him rolling. Big brothers
right.
and uncles would have beat the crap out of him and kept rolling. But most of the time, like you said, and you said something that was very, very important. You said sometimes after a while you become ostracized. Nobody wants to deal with you because guess what? You just keep going back to him.
Exactly.
Why do you keep going back? So we're tired of fighting him because you're going to continue to go back. We do this because we want to protect you. But you keep
yes.
going back to him. We can't keep doing this. But then everybody, when it's time for, like, if something very seriously happened, like somebody dies in the process, then everybody wants to come back in. Well, we didn't know it was going to get like that. We just wanted to. No, you have to have a real strong support system when it comes to domestic violence.
Right.
It's that noise again. Brian, are you muting yourself out again?
Hello?
Brian?
Who is that noise?
Oh, that's Brian.
Yeah, domestic violence is definitely a learned behavior. And, you know, as young women, and we don't have the examples of how a man should treat a woman, we just think that, you know, all attention is good attention.
Exactly,
and,
exactly.
You know,
that's not
the way it should be.
First of all, I'm going to say I agree with all of what's been said. I want to put another thing on the table, and it's not to criticize or attack anyone, but it's an observation as a black man.
Don't get punched.
Black man, and probably the other brother has seen this as well. As a black man of 47 years, I have watched in horror and in complete disgust and frustration to see very nice black men be ignored, rejected, passed over, dismissed as fags or gays or whatever, and watch the most hateful sociopathic black men, whether they are athletes or singers or whatever, be celebrated. There's really something, even when there's a father in the home and all this other stuff, that's really, really, really off in our mating process. And in this instance, because we're not talking about two men getting together, there's something that black women have got to figure out of telling a good black man from a no good black man, because gay folks find good black men, white women find good black men, Asian women find good black, everybody finds a good black man except for black women. What is it that they're looking for in a man? How come the abusive man has the hands over a good man? I'll say a little story to you. My introduction to being in the university was being at the University of Virginia in 1983. And my first party, one of my first parties. And all these guys and girls that went to good schools, not from poor neighborhoods, not like me. And these, I remember we're going to go to the party, and this guy come in, and they said, you know what, how do you pick up ladies? And the guy started to explain how he would communicate to a woman. The guy says, you're not going to make it here. By the way, UVA is one of the top 20 schools in the country. So he said, let me show you how to talk to a woman here. And I went to the bathroom and watched them rehearse saying bitch in the mirror for about 15 minutes. And then the guy says, I think you got it. Now, that's the guys, but here's the thing. Men will present women with what they think women will go with. What is it about a woman that needs to be called that particular thing in the initial conversation? It can't possibly lead to anything better. And I can see other instances I've watched this my whole life, and the black men that are nice are soft. We have a variety of words that are dismissive for black men that do the right thing. In particular, one word is, oh, he's nice. So the guy that's nice you have no interest in. And it fascinates me that these brutal, violent black men have it so easy in meeting people. And yet I know so many black men who end up marrying women in other ethnic groups or whatever. The story is all the same. They wouldn't even notice me. I wasn't bad or doggish or violent enough to attract attention. So as I grew up on the campus of Howard University, I would watch black men who came from good homes learn how to be abusive to black women in order to be in relationship with them. So, you know, and it's sad because somebody learned from someone. On one hand, some people have families with their patterns of violence, and then we live in a society and a subculture within black community where if you really want a woman, you need to learn how to be a pimp. You better not be yourself. You better not be a decent person. Better not be a nice dude. She'll mistreat you. And so we have a culture that seeds this. And at some point, whether it's the rappers who cuss out and date rape and gang rape and our black athletes that we celebrate that gang rape and abuse women, as long as that's held up as what a man is supposed to be, by women as well as men, we can expect epidemic rates of this problem.
It's true.
It's just described Mary J. Blige's song,
Mr. Wrong.
Or I Want a Roughneck. I mean, the celebration of the rapist, the celebration of the abuse, even in Spike Lee's movie School Days. As long as I just sit around the story of a man, probably a black man who died from having silicone injected into his penis, it wasn't big enough, even though he had two kids. As long as the men are esteemed for their physicality alone, for their animalism alone, where, forgive me, many black women, what they look for in a black man is what a Ku Klux Klansman looks for in a black man. Animal and not human, then we'll get it. And nobody has this talk because usually it's just I've been hurt, I've been abused, and I've had to say to certain sisters I've spoken to, why did this guy have such an easy way to you? Why didn't some of the other guys that you, and the thing is, well, he goes to church, he's so nice. Nice is their way of saying MF. He's a mofo if he's nice. And so I just encourage the people listening to really sit down and think, what is it that you look for? And do you see a human being when you see a black man? Or do you see a barbaric penis that's supposed to beat the hell out of you on the weekends? You know, or you're supposed to have all this drama and confusion in order for it to be a relationship. Because, trust me, like what the sister's saying, the host, if you say I'm uncomfortable, I'm not going to have this, anyone that was serious would try to work on themselves provided they had something to work with in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But the bar is really low when I see women who now don't wear underwear in public and all this, and I'm a hoe and I'm a this, and nigga got to be tough. I mean, there's so much stuff that just is actually the only kind of men that can deal with some of the foolishness that we have, right, are the men with no character. And unfortunately, that spills over on good women who find dudes who think you gotta pull a woman's panties off on the first date.
I'm not trying to belittle anyone, and I pray no one takes this in the wrong manner. But this situation is so deep that we have literally men and women out there that are, especially the men, and I'm speaking on the men because of the situation with these young ladies, that are so uncivilized. They are using our sisters as battering posts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're cowards.
Exactly.
They need to be brought back. And when I say brought back home is, you know, they need to just be taken in a little box. We don't need any guns. Just need to be taken in with some real men, show them what a real man is.
Exactly.
But and a lot of times it comes from seeing this done or seeing this done to other family members, and they just know them. But then, too, I would say there are sisters out there that don't know a real man when they see one.
Right.
I have some so close. I have some so close to me, I tried to introduce them to real men, but they wanted the thug. Not necessarily that they don't get beat on by these men. Don't take me wrong, but what I'm saying, they wanted the thug. They wanted one that didn't work. Wanted one that was cool. One that was laid back. But those who worked, those who wanted something, wanted to have a home, wanted to have family, wanted to take care of their family. Those are the ones they wanted. They were the nerdy type. Those were maybe been closer to their church. They didn't want those. They wanted one that was on the outside. And as they
interject something? I'm agreeing with you, but you know, we have the most demonic concept of what a nerd is as a people. because I'm a nerd for black folks, but I can dance and dress and do all this stuff. I've seen a white nerd where they can't dress and they can't color coordinate. Our concept of what a nerd is a good black man.
Right.
Okay? The decent black men are, and that shows you the white supremacy in our mating process. There's a book called Rituals of Blood by Orlando Patterson from Harvard, and he quotes this woman anthropologist whose name is Jane Lancaster. Jane Lancaster talks about how in slavery, because black men didn't have money and could not necessarily protect or take care of black women, what women look for and a mate in slavery had nothing to do with traditional male-female relations. It had to be a man that could protect her, which is where the women are attracted to the very violent, aggressive type dudes, or he had to be able to make her laugh, or had to be a good dancer, or had to be a sex machine. A provider, a person good for the children, none of that's factored into the calculus for how a mate, and we have the same mate selection process 100 years allegedly after, 150 years allegedly after slavery ended. We have the same backward system, a barbaric system that we haven't gotten rid of, and we can no longer blame white people. If I see a woman as simply as a vagina, with a body to support the existence of this genitalia that I want to exploit, I can't blame Jim Crow or Jesse Helms or Mr. Romney. That's on me now, okay? Not when you have people like Maya Angelou and Betty Shabazz, and we've had these great, there are folks, like you said, that need to be brought home. We need to kick these folks in the behind, okay? I know as a teacher, of course, I'd get fired, because I wouldn't let the guys do certain things with women in the class. If I see someone that got too enervated, tell them, you need to move because you can't think about my subject.
Right.
Your mind is somewhere else. And if you think I'm a faggot because I don't want you sitting next to girls oodling at them, worry about the faggot who has his red pen that will fail you. But you won't sit there and you won't touch yourself, not with me here. Do it someplace else, and I hope you have rubber gloves.
I want to kind of reiterate back to when you were saying, you know, what us women look for in a man. I'm going to be honest. You know, I come from a damn good family. I come from 10 boys, and I'm the only girl. And when first time ever dating was, I always wanted a man that's a replica of my father, because my father was a good black man. He taught us, like, I go back to, you got to also look at, a lot of babies are having babies, and that's why a lot of kids are growing up these days kind of like into, like you were saying, you know, as long as you got those rapper images and those thuggish images out there, most young women are into that type things, which is raising their babies, because they're already still babies, raising their babies up to want to be that way and to want. But I must say, me personally, I was raised by both of my parents, and to this day, I always wanted a guy to be every replica of my father, because my father was a good black man. He never cheated on my mom. He stuck by us, and he taught us the value of a dollar. Like, we didn't get hand fed nothing. We didn't get just anything we wanted. If we wanted Jordans, we had to work for them Jordans. If we wanted name brand clothes, we had to work for them name brand clothes and appreciate the things that we have, whether it's small or big or expensive. You know, I was brought up that way. And, you know, as you were saying, like, you know, what us women look for, and what is it the big, you know, penis, or is it more, me, frankly, my kid's dad started off as a good black man. I mean, he was in the
church, and he was into the family type things, and he was into me being his queen and him being my king. But at the same time, somewhere in life, it brought him down. So I'm just saying, not to just throw it out of what we're talking about. It's just more like I did that. The man I looked for was a replica of my father. And somewhere in his life, I never knew that, back to what the other lady was saying, like so much things happen into a man's life. He could have been, you know, brought up to be act like a pimp or whatever. But in my kid's dad case, his mom used to let him have sex with older women when he was a child. So therefore, I don't know if somewhere in that line that made him snap after the fact, you know, we begin to have kids together and start off. And he also was about to be a pro athlete. He was about to be a pro football player. And he hurt himself. He hurt his knee, which that's what ended up him blaming us for that, his family, then to drug and alcohol, because he never drunk, smoked, or nothing in a day in his life. But after he hurt himself, it went to blame. He blamed himself, which ended up started blaming his family. And that's how eventually the drugs corrupted his mind so much, after feeling sorry for himself, it ended up turning into an abusive relationship that I never thought of. And I must say, and be honest, that I was in denial of it for so long, because this man started off as a good replica man as my father was.
Can I say something in response? Because it sort of touches on an issue for me that's very, very clear that it's missed. If I had been a girl that had sex with adult men, it would be presumed that I was damaged by it, because we recognize the full humanity of women, and when they're girls, they're not supposed to be exposed to sex. It is repugnant that so many people think that boys who are sexually abused, as long as it's with a woman, it's good. That fits within the idea that anything involved with the woman's private parts to the man is always good. That's at the heart of a lot of abuse and sexual violence in our community. And the women are no more enlightened about it than men are. Okay? So if this boy, as a boy, his mama allowed him to be abused like that, okay, there was a problem. And unfortunately, I watch this sometimes on television. If it's a teacher that molested a little boy, everyone, oh, that's good for him. If it's a girl and it's a male teacher, the man is a monster. We need to have some equality in how we look at abuse and sexual exploitation and violence, because the lack of it contributes to the problem. I worked with two boys as a big brother when I was a student, a divinity student at Harvard, who were being molested by their aunt and their mother. And these boys had the most angry attitude towards women. It was almost, I knew something was wrong, because the way that this boy at the age of 8 would talk about women's private parts, I was thinking,
right,
he's not making this up. He
right.
really, and he didn't do this once. He's done it quite a bit. So when his
right.
mother got attacked and his aunt got attacked and raped by some folks because they owed them money for crack, and one of my associates, who was a minister, went to the family to talk to them, and he called me, and he said, I have one more thing to tell you. I interrupted him and said, and the mother and the aunt are having sex with the two boys.
Oh, my God.
And he said, who told you? I said, I've known, but what do you do? By the way, if you're a black male or female child,
mm-hmm.
and mama's tricking you out to her girlfriends or tricking you out to her boyfriends or whatever.
Wow.
And so this is an issue that we don't deal with in our community, because it's a
wow.
major issue. And I'll go one further. There's a greater willingness to punish men when they're sexually inappropriate with children, though not enough. All you need to do is go on and look. The Church of God in Christ, the Pentecostal denomination, once upon a time a wonderful holy group, they had an epidemic of ministers involved with raping girls and boys. I'm talking about the Pentecostal holiness, apostolic type folks. We've got a real problem, but we will sometimes punish men. We have a very hard time looking and holding women accountable around a lot of this abuse. I'm thinking about the cases in New York and in D.C., where mothers were having their male children give oral sex to men in exchange for crack. And you wonder how that boy's going to come up.
Wow.
And how can you say your mama pimped you out to a man? So a lot of men who've gone through this in our community, because you can't say you hate your mama, okay?
Wow.
You tear up the next woman that comes along.
Wow.
And so, and there's a whole, see, we have a problem as a community of dealing with the fact that we have not only no good daddies, but we have some sorry mothers.
Right, exactly.
And they unleash their children that they've damaged on the rest of us. And they get the cover of womanhood, which I think for a good mother, you deserve it. For a rotten mother, like some of the ones where I've seen the kids, where the kids have been abused by the mama, they're just as criminal as Adolf Hitler and any other little bigot Mark Furman cop. And part of when this brother says bring them home, we need to start holding women accountable for, I see it in public, they're yelling and cussing at the kids and doing all this kind of stuff and swinging on them and all this. And we think that, oh, that's good discipline. No, it's not. No, it's not. And so there's a lot of anger and rage towards mama and daddy, okay,
right,
that plays out in how we deal in our next relationships. And I would also urge folks to find out about, I always ask young women what they think of their father if I'm interested in them. They don't like their dad, I don't spend any time on them. Vice versa, the boys don't like their mama, don't love their mama, not devoted to their mama. That should tell you something.
Yeah.
You'll learn everything out of that. But still, let me just repeat that. This notion that there's nothing that can be done to damage the psyche of a black man, that comes from white people. And it's interesting, the same way black men have borrowed from white supremacy, our sick way of looking at our sisters, many of our sisters have borrowed from white supremacy a way of looking at black men. And that allows someone to say, oh, well, it's okay, like that movie Sweetback with Mario Van Peebles with the boys in the whorehouse screwing women. That messes people up. It messed up Mr. Brown, Chris Brown, who was whored out to older women. And who else? Usher. You look at these people's lives, it's not great that folks are having sex at 7 and 6 and 5 with adults. I mean, maybe it's exploration when you're playing with your peers, but when you have grown adults, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. And in fact, the people who used to do that were white. White boys were brought of age being able to play with black women as toys in slavery. We now do it to ourselves. That's how slavery
right.
are.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So we're down to 2 minutes, and I want Judicial Movement to kind of give out your information. And, DeAndre, I want to thank you very much for your time, for coming on, telling us your story. Jackie, I want to thank you for coming on and telling your story, you guys. It's just like it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to be done, and a handful of people can't do it.
Right.
A handful of people can't do it. It's got to be a lot of outreaching.
Right.
The whole situation, a lot of outreaching. So I want to say thank you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Can I backtrack a little bit? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sure. You got 1 minute.
Okay, go ahead, Russ.
I would just like to get out our information for Judicial Justice Movement. You can find us on Facebook. We have a brand new page. You can find on Facebook. Just go to Facebook search and type in Judicial Justice Movement. We have a page that's international, and we also have a group You can join
okay, and
either
what you
one.
Say, what you say the name of the organization is again? This is Jackie, and I just get that information again.
Judicial Justice Movement. Judicial Justice Movement.
Okay.
Are you on Facebook?
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
I'd like to thank you for having me on and being able to explain my situation.
Yes, I'm glad you came on. You're welcome, honey. Anytime.
Thank everybody
anytime.
From the Judicial Justice Movement. You've helped me getting my story out.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you, Dr. Short and Roz
definitely.
And Brian, you guys. Thank you guys for coming and listening and suggesting and being a part of something that, you know, guys, could make a difference in someone's life tonight. So I want to say thank you again. And you guys have a great night. And this is Say
thank
Your
you
Peace
everyone.
With Salida and Brian. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Jackie,
thank
I
you
want
guys.
You to get in contact with me.
What's your number? How do I get in contact with you?
You are you a friend of